Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back in 15 minutes away, we'll talk with Jim Sterk, the athletic director at Missouri, Jeff Long, the athletic director at Kansas.
We will bring them on together and let them duke it out.
That's right.
Two men into
six what? Year.
Only one will survive.
Well, only one will, two men will enter, only one will survive.
I didn't want to go dark there at the end, though. I realized we'll let them both survive.
That's right. It's true.
It's not like a Thunderdome going
six
on.
Six year deal. They're playing hoops. Beginning next season, December 12th, 2020 at Sprint Center.
What do you think the scalpers are going to get for those tickets?
Oh, geez. I mean, a tough ticket.
Both, I think it is.
Both venues.
I mean, the exhibition
well,
game was a tough ticket. Yeah. Remember? Like, people wanted in on that. It shows you the appetite for that game and that rivalry here in Kansas City. It may not be a big rivalry in, you know, St. Louis, or it may not be a big rivalry in Manhattan, Kansas, but I'm not in St. Louis, thank God, and I'm not in Manhattan, Kansas. I'm here in Kansas City, and it's a big rivalry here in Kansas City. And I can say I was wrong, man. I didn't think we needed Mizzou back on the schedule at all after the Big 12 fell apart, but when we played in 2017, I told you, it's an exhibition game in October, and I'm sitting in my car and driving slow to my destination because I don't want to miss what's going to happen, and I'm getting irrationally upset at the University of Missouri. And so that's what it's all about. It reestablishes and reignites a flame that was really close to burning out, and now we got this thing back lit again. And for the next 6 years, it's going to be a lot of fun having that game at least one time, and then eventually weave football back into the mix and have all the fun with that kind of stuff and get this thing really back and cook it. I'd love to see it again, though, Josh, where we found a way to play that game now as part of the Big 12 SEC Challenge and also play it as an independent game.
Ooh.
And that way you get it at home and home every single year.
Ooh.
I may
now
be on
talking.
To something, right? Instead of Kansas-Kentucky or Kansas and Florida for that Big 12 SEC Challenge, we need to make the Kansas-Missouri game the Big 12 SEC Challenge, and then we also need to have the game in December, and we would alternate venues. So if the December game is in Lawrence, the January game can be in Columbia and vice versa, and kind of do that. And that way we get it back on the schedule twice, and that way we get the home and home. That way we get the trash talking twice. And quite honestly, I don't care about anybody else in the Big 12 or the SEC, their feelings getting hurt on the potential of doing that. It helps the sport of college basketball. It helps Kansas City, and it clearly helps both of those institutions. So I'm going to play the selfish card on this one and say if the SEC and Big 12 want to do it right, get that as the Big 12 SEC Challenge, and let's play this thing twice a year. Because I think it would have juice twice a year.
Yeah, I think they probably tried to have the discussion before.
Well, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then now that the door has been open, I think those two leagues, when they get together, go, okay, you cool, we schedule you guys for this.
Yeah.
Hopefully it wouldn't be just once, but it might. They might just make that the one. I don't know.
Why limit it to one? Why not allow it to be twice? So what if it's two times a year? Who cares? I think with the way that sports is changing so much in front of our eyes, and we're doing anything we can to get people to venues, you know, we hear about it all the time. I mean, the release talked about buying Kansas season tickets for this year, and Kansas has their first game on Thursday at Allen Fieldhouse. So you can still get season tickets to Allen Fieldhouse, a place that you could never get season tickets. I don't know how many ads I'm served a day on the internet from the Chiefs of saying, if you're not at Arrowhead, you're not at Arrowhead. You know, like one of those.
Everybody's battling to sell tickets.
Everybody's battling to sell tickets. And with the landscape of sports changing so much and fewer people going to venues, why wouldn't you take this game and say, you know what, screw it. Let's play it twice a year. It's a game people want, and we're in this to make money. Let's find a way to maximize this and play at each venue once a year and get people in the seats and get people in the doors, because people will go, Ray. They will. They will go to those games. If you schedule it, they will come. And if you put Kansas on the schedule in Columbia and Missouri on the schedule in Lawrence every year, people will make it a point to go to that game. But if you're looking at TCU or you're looking at South Carolina, you're like, eh, so what? I can watch it at home, catch it on the radio, maybe see some highlights. But if it's Kansas and it's Missouri, you're going to make it a point to be invested in that game.
They will pay top dollar, Ray.
They will. And, you can overprice the ticket, too, like you do.
They will pay top dollar.
You know, you have that dynamic pricing.
Are the Chiefs too dependent on the quarterback? Colin Cowherd of our sister station, 1660 The Score and Fox Sports, says the Chiefs are dependent on Mahomes.
Kansas City, and this is actually, the media tends to think this is great, is becoming too dependent on Patrick Mahomes. And they're not even paying him yet. When they pay him $300 million, what do you think that defense, which is bad now, is going to look like? Green Bay became way too dependent on Aaron Rodgers. This year, they're not. Now they've got a defense. Now they've got a running game. Think about New England. Tom Brady got hurt. They won 11 games. Think about the Saints. Drew Brees gets hurt. They're 4-0. Think about San Francisco, that defensive front. They can win low-scoring games with a backup quarterback. Think about Seattle. They've got a running game and Pete Carroll's defense. Those teams need quarterbacks, but they're not completely reliant on them. And I think Green Bay 2 years ago figured it out. God, if Aaron misses games, we can't even move the ball. So Green Bay went out and went and drafted nothing but defensive players in the first three rounds. Their free agents were nothing but top defensive players. And this year they're trying to establish a running game. So they want Aaron, but they don't want to be totally dependent on Aaron. And that's what worries me about Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City.
I know you don't want to become too top heavy.
Right.
We've talked about it forever, right? You want to find a way that he doesn't eat up your entire cap when you got to pay him, right?
Sure.
You need to build pieces around him. But to say the Packers were too reliant, well, you have to be reliant on your quarterback. If Aaron Rodgers isn't playing for them, they're not the Packers.
Correct. But I think
if the Chiefs moving forward aren't relying on Patrick Mahomes, they're not going to be the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. I think when you have that, that's what happens when you have that franchise quarterback. You do become reliant on it. You do have to still put pieces around it. But to say that they're not doing it the right way, for instance, don't become too reliant on Your quarterback's your star. It's a star league. It's a quarterback league.
It is a quarterback-driven league, but he makes a couple of good points with the Colts. They're 4-2 with a backup. The Saints are 5-0 with their backup quarterback. And how about the Carolina Panthers, 4-0 with their backup quarterback that nobody can name right now with their starter Cam Newton on the bench? And we were talking about it before the show. Do you even go back to Cam Newton right now? How, if you're Carolina, do you go back to Cam Newton when your backup has led you to a 4-0 start? Do you have the same faith that the Chiefs could be 5-0 with Matt Moore, or they could be 4-0 with Matt Moore, or they could be 4-2 with Matt Moore? I don't know the answer to that question. I think what Colin is getting at here. And
no, I think those teams have done an amazing job with their backup quarterbacks. That's not always how it works.
Right, but I think what Colin is getting at here is in the NFL, you need to be a well-balanced team. And when you are too top-heavy and too reliant on that one position, as he talks about with the quarterback, you let some of the other positions go for naught. I mean, that's always been kind of the knock on Andy. He never really focuses on the running game. And clearly, since he's been in Kansas City, well, at least the last couple of years anyway in Kansas City, the emphasis on defense just hasn't been there right now. And if this was a team that had a better defense right now, and say Kareem Hunt still on this team, if he didn't lie to the organization and have to get cut back in December, I think you would feel a lot better about where this team would be going with a backup quarterback than where you feel right now. If this defense was the defense, say, of 2014, let's just use that as an example, you would feel really good that they could shut down the Green Bay Packers offense and give Matt Moore the opportunity to win you a football game. And the same thing with the Minnesota Vikings. And I think that's what he's getting at. It's what I've talked about for the last couple of weeks, playing better complementary football. And I think this is one of those weeks where you really do need to play complementary football. Get McCoy involved a little bit more than you have over the last couple of weeks. You know, maybe you take your drives and you make them longer this week than trying to quick strike it from 80 yards out. Not that you can't go ahead and mix a couple of those in as well, but there's nothing wrong with having long plotted out drives like New England did last night in their first drive against the Jets. So I understand what he's saying. You want to be solid from 1 to 53. That way, if you lose one, you still got 2 to 53 that can carry you. And I think there are question marks still for everybody whether or not this team can be carried with Patrick Mahomes out of the lineup.
Both of the ADs, Jim Sterk of Missouri, Jeff Long of Kansas. Join us next.
The Fesco in the morning.
Back in Tuesday edition of Fesco in the Morning, along with Bob Fesco, Ryan Witkowski, I'm Josh Klingler. It is a glorious day because Kansas and Missouri are going to play hoops again. A six-year contract beginning next season, December 12, 2020, at Sprint Center. First regular season meeting between the two since 2012. They'll play at both campuses twice, and bookended by Sprint Center matchups as well. We're going to get back to it, Fesco.
Yeah, first time since this nice block by Thomas Robinson.
They're going into Pressey. 8 seconds to play. Pressey across midcourt. 5 seconds. Pressey drives. Shot block.
There it is. Shot blocked. A clean block by Thomas Robinson.
It was wonderful.
In the final game played between the two teams at Allen Fieldhouse.
See, and now we know where you stand. We're going to talk to both athletic directors who were involved in getting this thing done.
Did you need me to say that to know where I stand?
No, I mean, not really. Jeff Long of Kansas, the athletic director. Jim Stirk, the athletic director at Missouri. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us. We'll start first with Jim. Your thoughts from the Missouri side and getting this thing going again.
Well, obviously excited. You know, heard about the rivalry when I came 4 years ago, and 2 years ago we came together for a great cause with the Showdown for Hurricane Relief, and created a lot of excitement. I saw the passion and was hopeful at some point something would happen. So when Jeff came on board just over a year ago at KU, I reached out and we talked a little bit, and then he said he was going to monitor the situation, and so we've been connected and started talking and having discussions, and so we were excited about it coming together yesterday.
And Jeff, from your standpoint, how much convincing of Bill Self did you have to do on this one?
Well, you know, when I arrived, I asked the question, you know, how did our coaches feel? We met as head coaches, certainly had individual conversations, and Bill was certainly very important to helping us get to a place to restart the rivalry. But, you know, I said that Kansas folks really needed to make this decision. So over the last 12, 14 months, I've listened to them and we talked. And then ultimately, I think it came down to our coaches and Coach Self, the rivalry was maybe slipping away, and we thought it was important for our program and for really our university and college basketball. It's a great rivalry. So, you know what, when the Kansas folks got momentum and got behind it, as I talked quietly, it felt like the right time to do it, and then we went to work with Jim to make it a reality.
And how much of this also was done, you know, for Kansas City because of how important the rivalry is here and how important Kansas City is to both of you guys?
I'll let Jeff go first there.
Well, for us, KC is important. It's important to the university. We recruit a lot of students out of there. We get a lot of student athletes from there. And then we've had an ongoing relationship with the Sprint Center, and we felt this first year it was important to, you know, kind of meet our obligation. We felt like we had an obligation there. So that's why it starts in the Sprint Center and then ends in the Sprint Center. Adds the symmetry of it. It's our home game the first year, and then the final season, it's Missouri's home game.
Jim?
Yeah, obviously Kansas City is important to us, and this year we're playing a tournament there, and it's one of, even though it's a couple hours away, it's one of our largest areas as far as our season ticket base, even for basketball, and so. Important on a lot of fronts. Our chancellors were involved. They were at AAU meetings yesterday, and we're having discussions about the series, and they really helped push it forward. So I'm excited on all fronts. Our fans are excited. I know Coach Martin believes in playing, you know, tough games, and this is a great program that KU has, and we want to compete against that, and it'll be fun to do it over the next 6 years.
For both of you guys, have you guys worked harder at establishing a game and trying to schedule a game than maybe you have on this Kansas-Missouri deal?
Start with Jeff.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, came together pretty easily, it may not be the right word, but I think when you had both parties willing to make something happen, it came together pretty easily, Jim.
Yeah, I think so. Like we said, we've talked on and off for a while, and we've known each other for a long time. So that helped, being able to trust someone as you're having, you know, very confidential conversations. And actually, we had a lot of fun just springing it on all of you media guys yesterday or last night. So that was fun as well.
It was well done. I'll give you that. Hey, Jim, we want to get greedy a little bit. Is there a chance we could, I don't know, maybe play a second game as part of the Big 12 SEC Challenge every year?
Actually, we talked about that, and it won't be part of the Big 12 SEC Challenge. So we'll just keep it with one.
Oh, man, I think you need to go with two.
That'd be great.
With everybody
spot.
Trying to fill buildings, play one game in Columbia, one in Lawrence, man. That's the proposal right there.
That's another step.
That might be too much of a good thing.
I don't know, man. This is pretty good. What about football? Are we ready for a football game?
Yeah, Jeff, let's get this football game going.
Yeah, I think we both alluded to in our releases that we're continuing to talk about other sports, and football is certainly one that we're both interested in. So we're continuing to talk about that. Also, women's basketball, women's sports will be included in this. So we're working on those as we go forward. The basketball one was important and fell into place quite easily. So we're continuing to work on those other sports, so you can expect other announcements going forward.
And so how difficult, though, is it for football? I see games that are scheduled in 2030. Like, is this something that we could realistically do, like, in a time frame that, like, people can grasp, you know?
Yeah, I think that's – I was just going to get to that football takes a little bit longer. You know, obviously basketball schedules are set just – a year or less in advance, a lot of them, and so football takes a longer, but hopefully we'll get some dates that are, and we're looking at dates together that can work in the shorter. It won't be 2032 for the first game if we can get it all done. So it'll be sooner than that.
And is that one that would be at Arrowhead, or is that campus sites? How do you guys envision that? Jim, we'll start with you. How do you envision the football game playing out?
Well, we're having discussion. We've played at Arrowhead before, and I think that would be a great location for us to do it. And it's not out of the realm of possibility of having a home and home as well.
That's pretty cool, guys. Congratulations on getting this done. I think for Kansas City and both fan bases, it's something that's ready to happen and ready to get back after it again. So I'm glad both schools can get on the same page. This is cool.
Well, thanks for having us on. Thank you.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Jim Stirk, the athletic director at Mizzou. Jeff Long, the athletic director at Kansas. Basketball's on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Others coming soon. And football does take a little bit longer to schedule out. And so to rearrange and to get those things takes a little bit longer. You can't just kind of flip it around. Hey, you guys got an open date on this date? We got an open date on this date for hoops.
Right.
Oh, you guys said this Saturday? We have this Saturday, too. Let's play this game.
Sure.
A little bit easier for basketball. Football takes a little bit of time, but it sounds like from both sides, it's this sixth game or just the beginning.
I think that the most interesting thing from that interview that we took away is that Jim Stirk talked about trusting someone. When you trust someone, you can get it done, and he's talked about the trust that he has for Jeff Long and vice versa. When the Big 12, you know, fell apart and split up, well, that was a big buzzword that was used by people at the University of Kansas especially. I don't know that we can trust these guys over at Mizzou. And now that we've got new blood in basically at every position of, you know, kind of leadership at both Kansas and Missouri, you feel like there is a trust now between the two, a trust that was violated, a trust that didn't exist, because as the old story goes, and we can, you know, tell tales now from when that all happened, Missouri was working both sides of the room. They were trying to date both people at the same time, and whoever was going to come with the best offer, that's ultimately where they were going to go. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when you're telling one side of the room, hey, we're in this, we're together, and then you're telling the other side of the room, hey, we want to be with you, the trust goes away. And that's where Kansas was with the University of Missouri. They didn't trust them because of the way that they handled the exiting of the Big 12 Conference. They thought they were in it with them. They were going to fight the good fight together. And meanwhile, Missouri was negotiating their exit with the SEC. And so it's really good and important, I believe, for this rivalry to have that trust factor back in it. Because without the trust of these two universities in each other, there's no way that this could happen. And it's good to hear that both of those guys seemingly trust each other now, and the programs and the athletic departments can trust each other as much as rivals can trust each other.
Yeah, and both athletic departments have turned over as well since that point in time.
But yeah.
Jim Stirk, Jeff Long have obviously knowledge of each other and both being in the SEC. Jeff Long was at Arkansas prior to coming to Kansas. Kind of knows that deal as well. Kind of fresh eyes on the whole thing from both.
Right.
And then obviously Bill Self was the last really remaining holdover from that entire time. And once he kind of gave the blessing,
right.
Things were definitely moving forward after they got that exhibition game and saw how fun that was for everybody involved. By the way, Michael Porter played in that game. Remember?
He did?
Yeah. Yeah.
He played at Mizzou?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was when he was healthy. He played in that game. I mean, that had a lot of juice for an exhibition game. This one's going to do the same thing for a regular season game, and it only makes sense to add the other sports as well. They've faced off a couple times in, like, postseason things, and it almost felt you still kind of got that uncomfortable, like, oh, these two.
Yeah.
Make it comfortable again, and then make it uncomfortable for the fans, because everybody wants to get back after it. I think time is right for the fans to get after.
Well, I think it is too, and I continue to see from some Kansas fans, I don't care. This doesn't mean it means a lot. Don't kid
when
yourself.
That game comes up, you're not going to be turning your back, yeah, going, "This is just another game."
Yeah,
you're not going
don't,
to.
Don't lie to yourself. Don't try to fool yourself. This game means a lot. I tried to lie and fool to myself for a long time, and I realized I was just lying and fooling to myself about the importance.
It's going
to
be fun.
This game. It is going to be a lot of fun, and we also have to give credit, and we'd be remiss by not crediting Kathy Nelson, the head of the sports commission, for getting this thing done, because, you know, part of her vision back in 2017 with the charity game was to find a way to make this, you know, a year-round, every year type of game. And I think because of her, I mean, she's a great mediator, a great negotiator, like the Winston Churchill of Kansas City. You know, she can have everybody come in the middle and meet and figure this thing out. And for her to be able to get everybody on both sides, I think she had a lot to do with this in you know, kind of bringing the olive branch together between these two universities and saying, hey, this can happen. Here's how it can happen. This is what we can do. And so we got to give Kathy a lot of credit as well for figuring this out and bringing these two sides together and making peace and getting this thing moving in the right direction and back to where it should be, and that's playing every single year.
It's going to be fun. Starting next season at the Sprint Center, two games on each of the campuses twice, I should say, and then back to Sprint Center to conclude that six-year deal, and hopefully the first of just playing this thing every year. First meeting, though, in the regular season since 2012. Our thanks to Jim Stirk and Jeff Long for dropping by. Comedian Craig Gass will join us next.
Fesco in the morning.
Back in Tuesday edition, Fesco in the morning, along with Bob Fesco, Ryan Witkowski. I'm Josh Klingler. Pleased to be joining the studio. Craig Gass is here. He'll be performing at Clint's Comedy Stop on 119th Street in Overland Park coming up this weekend.
Yes.
And he drops by to chat with us wearing a spanking Mariners hat.
Yeah, I'm one of four Seattle Mariner fans still left on the planet.
Wow, there's that many still, huh?
Yeah, it's not easy, but man, I am a fan of underdogs.
Well,
yeah.
It's good that you stick with you know, your roots, I guess you could say. You grab a team and stick with it, right?
I'm from New York.
And so why are you a Mariners fan,
then? I grew up 10 miles from Yankee Stadium, and I remember going. So the Yankees are my birthright,
right?
And I remember going to a baseball game when I was 8 years old. I looked at my mom and I said, this stadium is loaded with a-holes. I was 8 years old when I said that. And I saw such horrifying behavior from fans that I made a really grown-up decision. And I said, if my team winning means that all these drunk guys are going to be happy, I can't do this. I'm just going to be a fan of players. I'm not going to be a fan of teams.
Gotcha.
And by the way, I think more people should do that today.
Be fans of players and not teams.
Not go into the groupthink.
Yeah.
You know, if you see bad stuff going on, you need to pull back and go, hey, we need to be nicer to each other.
Right.
And then when I got to Seattle to start doing stand-up comedy, three of my favorite Yankees had made it to the Mariners organization. Lou Piniella was the head coach. Mm-hmm. Willie Randolph was a base coach. And Goose Gossage was in his last year as a relief pitcher. And I thought, this will be my team. And that sad little team, like, never paid off. But I book all my shows around the United States, around sporting events, so I can see the Mariners play in every stadium around the country. I go to the Super Bowl every year, and I interview the players on both teams to do silly stuff. And it's a big reason why I'm not famous, but I'm having a great time. You know, I'm going to sporting events everywhere, and I've been really lucky in my career that I've done a lot of fun stuff that, you know, for the last few years I've been doing voices on Family Guy and American Dad.
Yeah, and, you know, also, I mean, people are like, I maybe I recognize his voice, maybe I don't, but you probably recognize him from King of Queens, as you mentioned, Family Guy, American Dad, a lot of different things. I mean, Sex and the City. I mean, you've been on a lot of different things. You're kind of like that guy where everybody goes, oh, yeah, I know that guy, right? Yeah. Like, so how did you get into doing voices? Because I think we would all like to do voices, and your story is kind of unique on how this all started for you.
Yeah, I've always been able to do any voice that I hear.
Okay, because we're going to test you. We've got a game that we want to play. We're going to play a couple of things and see if you can imitate these voices. Okay?
No problem. All right. And the reason I've been able to do it is because of how I grew up. And this is not a joke. This is a true story.
All right.
Everyone in my family is deaf. My mom, my dad, and my sister are all completely deaf.
Now, did your mom and dad meet because they were deaf and they were at events together? Is that how that ultimately happened?
In school. My mom was born completely deaf from a birth defect. My dad was born with all of his hearing. Mm-hmm. Lost it when he was a kid. He got into an accident that popped out his eardrums, so he had to go to deaf schools for the rest of his life.
Oh, geez.
And they met. They fell in love. They have my sister first, and my sister's born with my mom's genes. And then I was born with my dad's genes, with all my hearing. And it's funny, people will get sensitive about it and think, well, I don't want to say anything offensive. And meanwhile, the most outrageous and craziest deaf jokes I've ever heard in my life were from deaf people, like my own deaf family. Mm-hmm. Like last year, I threw a surprise birthday party for my sister. And you could argue that anything to deaf people is a surprise. But right. I threw a surprise birthday party for my sister.
You can say that. We can. Yeah.
And at dinner, my sister is sitting across the table from me, and she's signing to me in sign language. And she waves at me and goes, do you want to hear a good joke? And I said, sure. And then she said, me too. And I was like, oh, my God, what the hell?
What have I created?
Oh, my God. Yeah. So but growing up in a deaf family, I couldn't learn how to talk from my family. I learned how to talk by copying all the voices I heard on TV.
Which was the first voice that you kind of had that epiphany with and you're like, okay, this is where it is.
Well, no one's telling me that it's weird that I'm walking around talking like Howard Cosell, but, you know, like, I'm talking like the Fonz, I'm talking like Muhammad Ali, and there's no one there to go, hey, what are you doing, man? You're being weird.
Right.
And I'm mimicking all the voices that I heard, but, and by the way, never got an accent from the Bronx.
That's true, yeah.
Which is where I'm from, and everybody in the Bronx sounds like Tracy Morgan. Like everybody in the Bronx talk like this, whether you black or white, male or female. That's crazy. Hey, this is the voice of your next door neighbor, and I'm a Vietnamese girl. That's crazy. Like everybody sounded like that. So the weirder the voice, the easier it is for me to do it. Like Christopher Walken has a real stop and go kind of voice where he'll talk every once in a while. He'll stop. And then he'll keep going. Or Adam Sandler, who's really silly, and he's been doing movies for over 30 years, but he still talks like this. Shibby-doo, hee-hoo. So I've always had that ability, and it started out, you know, going into radio, doing stuff with Howard Stern, and then now with Family Guy and American Dad, they'll send me stuff and say, hey, can you do this voice? And if they give me a couple of days, I'll knock it out.
Who is on the Family Guy have you been?
I've been Al Pacino. I've been Robert De Niro. I've been
they're kind of the same, aren't they, Robert De Niro and Al Pacino?
Well, Robert De Niro is very breathy, you know, a little breathy. And then Al Pacino is all the way down here. That is a voice that women love to hear, even though he loves to yell for no reason. You know, That, you know what's crazy is my first episode of Family Guy.
I like he had to do the face.
Yeah, you got to do the face, though, to get into the character.
I usually do the, like, I think of the person more than the voice, every year. And all my sports radio buddies are always broadcasting from the Super Bowl Media Center. And I will have my friends will text me on Monday and Tuesday when nobody's in the Super Bowl Media Center. And they'll say, hey, can you join us as somebody famous so it sounds cool back to Minneapolis?
Right. And so, justify paying all this money to come to the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And the only remotely sports guy I can do is Tom Arnold, who used to host the Best Damn Sports Show, period. Right. So once a year, I will go up and down the radio row as Tom Arnold and go, hey, guys. Super Bowl is really exciting. I've been here for a couple days. I was actually at a cocaine anonymous meeting last night. Brett Favre. And I probably shouldn't say that out loud, but Brett Favre was there. And his sponsor is Bob Costas. And again, I shouldn't say that out loud, but Bob's addicted to upskirt porn. And And every year, Tom Arnold will get tweets from people saying, dude, it's supposed to be anonymous. Yeah. What are you doing? And every year, Tom Arnold fights with the world and says, hey, did you notice that Sam Kinison was there and that guy's been dead for 20 years, you idiot? Shut up. That's a comedian doing an impression of me. That wasn't me. And he fights every year with anybody who complains to him. And by the way, that's what you're going to see when you come out to the comedy shows this weekend. This is the whole show, is just a lot of impressions, stories about people who I do impressions of. And
some of whom don't like it.
And some of them.
Right.
And all of them have tried to meet me. But it's at a brand new place called Clint's Comedy Stop.
Yeah, 119th Street out in Overland Park. And you'll be there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Yeah. Clint Black apparently bought this comedy club. I don't know who the Clint is. Right. But there's a guy named Clint who bought the comedy club. And it's Clint's Comedy Stop. ClintsComedyStop.com, or you can go to my website, which is GetGas with two S's.com. But my first episode of Family Guy that I did, I don't know, do you get, I mean, you talk to sports stars all the time, so I'm assuming you're used to it at this point, and you don't, sometimes you kind of go, this is a little exciting.
Right.
But do you get more excited about people outside your world?
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, I get excited. Like, I've had moments, there's only been one moment where, of all the TV shows I've been on, King of Queens, Sex and the City, Family Guy was the first show I ever worked on that I was a fan. So I got a little, I came on a little strong. when I walked in, because my first recording session was with Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah.
And I'm super excited. Every joke I make that he laughs at, I laugh too hard on top of it. And dude, calm down. Just relax. We're gonna record. And I go, oh, okay. I felt like I'm talking to a girl for the first time. And the whole recording session lasts maybe 5 minutes, where Seth MacFarlane kept doing one line as Peter Griffin, where he kept saying, this is crazier than when Al Pacino was a slumlord laundromat tenant. And then they cut to me as Al Pacino, surrounded by a bunch of broken down washers and dryers, going, you're out of order. And you're out of order. And you're all out of order. And I did that three times. And Seth MacFarlane, who was running the board, said, okay, man, I think we're good. But I'm so nervous.
Let's stay a while.
Because,
right?
Yeah, and I believe in my delusional mind that since we're working together, that we're going to be friends now. So I stand up and I go, hey, do you want to hang out? And he said, hey, what do you mean hang out? And I said, you want to grab a coffee or something? And he goes, I got to work. And I said, okay. Do you want me to leave? And he goes, yeah, get the hell out of here. And I went, oh, I'm sorry. And I grabbed my paperwork and I walked out. I didn't hear from them for like 6 months after that. And then Linda, the casting director, kept calling me and saying, hey, Craig, can you do this voice or can you do this voice? And every time she called, I said, oh, yeah, I can do it. Whatever you need. And every time I've come back, I never see Seth MacFarlane. It's always this guy, Mike Henry, who does the voice of Cleveland and the creepy old guy. And every time I see Mike, I go, hey, Mike, is Seth around? Yeah. And every time we see him, he goes, don't worry about Seth. We'll get you out of here real quick. That tells you everything that you want to know.
They want no part of you.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to put Craig Gass to the test.
He's
performing at Clint's Comedy Stop coming up this weekend. When we come back, we're going to put him to the test for a couple of Chiefs. Next.
All right. Fesco in the morning.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.